Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio on this Tuesday, February the 18th. Thank you for listening to AFR. And it's good to be back. I'm Tim Wildman again with Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
Walker Wildman.
Good morning.
And Dr. Ray Pritchard. How you doing, Ray?
Good morning, Tim. How are you today?
Doing well. You know, what happened was about 10 days ago, my wife Allison and I said unto ourselves, we're gonna have to have some serotonin.
I like it.
Huh?
I like it. We all need serotonin.
We're going to have some serotonin. We have been under a cloud, a literal cloud in Mississippi since, and some people are, it's flooding in central Mississippi bad. And I know other states have experienced this as well. So anyway, we said, what can we do about this problem? And said, why don't we go to Florida? So we don't have any kids at home.
Uh-huh.
So we just got on a jet and went to Florida and for 4 days. And there's this thing, there's this big yellow thing in the sky. It's I don't know how to describe it to you, but it's amazing.
Is it bright?
Yes, it's bright. It puts off warmth, and it's a very nice thing. We did go down there for a few days and enjoyed the weather.
Mm-hmm. Did you play a little golf?
In Central Florida. No, I didn't take my clubs.
Oh.
Well, you know, when you go away with your wife, just you.
Oh, yes, yes.
Just you. So she's like, priorities. I don't want to. And we get on an airplane. If I say, can I take my golf clubs, that says I don't want to really spend a lot of time with you. I'd rather spend the time with people I don't even know.
That's not going to work
playing
out.
A game. And that wouldn't be, that's not healthy for marriage. But it was funny, though. We're down there. We're having breakfast, like on day two. Again, we only stayed 4 days. And we're at this golf course on where our condo is. And that's not good for me. You know what I'm saying? Because the grass is green. It's 72 degrees. And she goes, well, you know, this afternoon, if you want to rent some clubs and play, you know, I think maybe that'd be okay if you want to do that. So anyway, I didn't do that. No, honey, I want to spend time with you.
Oh, boy.
Quality time. Just
good man.
Me.
Good man.
Yeah, it was a good answer. So anyway, we did have a good trip. Seriously, people in central Mississippi, I know, Pearl River.
Yes, Jackson area.
Some serious flooding going on. Mm-hmm. And we certainly want to lift them up in our prayers. Mm-hmm. A lot to talk about today. As you can imagine, when have we got the Nevada caucus?
The Nevada caucuses are this Saturday, but tomorrow night in Las Vegas, there is a debate amongst the candidates, and it is the first time that the nation will get to see Michael Bloomberg in action in a debate. Mm-hmm. And this follows, there's a poll out this morning, and the results may surprise some people. Bernie Sanders comes in tops at 31%, but Michael Bloomberg, number two. Now, this is an NPR, PBS NewsHour, and Marist poll. Michael Bloomberg comes in at 19%. And that 19% is what got him into the debate.
You're talking about the Nevada? Is this a Nevada poll or among all Democrats?
This is a national poll.
A national poll? He's number two?
He is number two all of a sudden. Biden is number three at 15%. Warren, Elizabeth Warren, 12. Klobuchar, 9. But listen to this, folks. Buttigieg, Pete Buttigieg, former mayor.
Yeah.
8%. He's at the bottom.
Hmm.
Now, that's, where are you getting this poll from?
This is an NPR, PBS NewsHour, Marist national poll just out this morning. Now, Buttigieg surprises me because the stories, if you've been looking at the headlines in recent days, he's the rising star.
Yeah.
And he's regarded as the moderate to go against Sanders. But in this poll, depending on where they were asking people, he has not done well.
Yeah. Walker, what do you think about all this?
Well, I think it shows how fast things can change. Mm. And I think when Biden lost...
Money.
When Biden lost big time in Iowa and New Hampshire back-to-back, I think his viability shrunk big time.
Yes.
And then Biden, yeah, people had to go somewhere, so they've coalesced around Sanders, Buttigieg, and Bloomberg. I mean, I'm looking at a story now where Bernie Sanders drew 17,000 people to a rally in Washington State.
Did all of them have their clothes on?
Good question.
They didn't in Nevada.
Bernie had his
that's right.
On.
I saw the deal
you
in
see
Nevada.
That, Ray? They're taking off their clothes.
How come they didn't stop that?
Well, you had two women
I know.
That took off their tops and
nobody was stopping them, you know?
I think you're seeing the rise in Sanders. I think Bloomberg is helping fuel the rise of Sanders.
Yes.
Even though Bloomberg's actually pretty popular in this poll.
Yes.
But the Bernie crowd and the Warren crowd, they're all like-minded. They don't like that the billionaire's coming in.
Buying his way in.
Yeah. Buying his way in at the last
that
minute.
That goes against everything Bernie Sanders preaches and Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too, by
now,
the way.
I assume this poll was done just in the last few days, but I'm a little surprised Bloomberg did so well given the revelation of some of his statements since 2011. Let me just play you a little montage of these Bloomberg gaffes. We've talked about Biden gaffes over the last few months. Bloomberg gaffes.
I don't know if they're gaffes or not. We can talk about that when we get back or not. They might just be him plain speaking, and now he's saying, oh, I didn't mean everything I said for the last 10 years.
Good point. Cut number five.
So there's this enormous cohort of Black and Latino males, age, let's say, 16 to 25, that don't know how to behave in the workplace.
You show up with prostate cancer, and you're 95 years old. Go and enjoy. Have an ice cream. Lead a long life. There's no cure. And you can't do it. If you're a young person, we should do something.
I could teach anybody, even people in this room, so no offense intended, to be a farmer. You dig a hole, you put a seed in, you put dirt on top, add water, up comes the corn.
So, yeah, that's memory lane with Michael Bloomberg.
That's not going to play well in Nebraska right there.
I think the one
we don't like it in Kansas one bit.
And his comment there about if you're 95 and you have prostate cancer.
Right.
That's what I wanted to talk
wish
about.
Wish them all the best.
What's he talking about there, Walker? What was
he responding about,
to?
He's talking about government-run health care.
Yes.
And if in order for us to transition to government-regulated, fully-run health care.
That's what he's for?
That's what he's talking about.
Okay.
He was talking about, all right, this Medicare for all, universal health care, Obamacare-type plans. If we're going to do that, then you guys, talking to the crowd, we're going to have to accept that if you're older and you get diagnosed with something bad, then we're just not going to be able to treat you.
Yes.
It's all about priorities here.
Yes.
So he said, if you're 95 and you have prostate cancer, sorry, go home and have a good life.
You know what he would do?
He would pay to get the treatment.
Right.
Or he would fly to another country and get private treatment.
Yeah. You just bingoed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he would do, Michael, because he has the money to do it.
Mm.
Which, you know, good for him. I mean, he's made his money.
Yeah.
Fair and square. But I'm just saying that if you're going to have... But that does sound, that's very cold. It's a very inhumane, seems to me, way to look at health, government-run health care. You know, you got a chart. I guess you're going to have to, that's what Sarah Palin was talking about, death panels on, wasn't she?
Yes.
Isn't that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what you're talking about, Ray? Where you have if you're 95 and you get.
It's like a formula.
Pancreatic cancer, what did he say?
Prostate cancer.
The way you said it was just so callous.
It was cold, callous. Look, on a practical or in a practical sense, if you're 95 and you're a man and you get prostate cancer, they're probably not going to do the surgery, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But that's a decision doctors make, right? The hospital makes in consultation with the family.
Right.
What we're saying is we don't want the government mandating who gets treatment.
Right.
And who doesn't?
Yeah, he was doing sort of a cost analysis there.
Yep.
Bloomberg was. What do you think, Ray? What do you think about these other comments that he what do you call it? The frisk. New York
Stop
City
frisk.
Police.
Stop and frisk.
Stop and frisk. The way he go ahead.
Look. That was meant to be a common sense way of dealing with crime. I think what makes him look really bad is he clearly was for it. And now he's just gone 180 degrees in the other direction. And I think it makes him look like what he is on this issue, a flip-flopper, that he'll defend it until somebody criticizes it, and then he starts to run away. That's a bad look for a candidate.
Yeah, we'll see how he does. Now, Fred, did he buy his way into the debate?
Well, yeah, because they changed the rules. Because the
rules. Who changed the rules?
The Democratic National Committee.
Now, they got a history of doing this, don't
they? They got a history.
Changing the rules.
The rules were that you had to have a certain level of donations in order to make it onto a debate.
You mean number of donations as in quantity?
People.
Not how much.
No. People who donated to
you. So you can show an organic support among Democrats. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
Well, in Michael Bloomberg's case, as most people are now aware, he doesn't take any donations from people. He is writing the checks from his bank account, and that's all. Right. So they changed the rules in order to let him on the debate stage.
Is Bernie Sanders, is he going for this?
No, of course not. Bernie's never happy with
that's
anybody
gonna
else.
That's
going to be a fun debate tomorrow night.
That'll be worth watching.
If I were Mayor Bloomberg, I don't know if he benefits from going on in a debate like tomorrow night, because he's going to be like a pig, and he's going to have six ravenous wolves. I don't know if Mayor Pete could ever be ravenous. He just seems like he's too mild-mannered. But I'm talking about Warren and Sanders are going to go after him, Ray, unmercifully.
It's going to be night of the long knives. They're going to pull it out, and they're going to come after him. And we've never really – part of his appeal is he's just unbelievably rich, right? $64 billion. But we've never heard him get it down into the weeds of policy. I'm not sure – how well he's going to hold up when Bernie's on one side and Elizabeth Warren's on the other and Klobuchar's coming and Biden's taking a swing and whatever Mayor Pete does. It's going to be a free-for-all, and they're all going to be coming after him tomorrow night.
What's going to be most interesting to me to watch is here you have the ultimate capitalist, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Who just bought himself a place on the debate stage against a socialist who – and who wants to take all – if Bernie could have his way, he would take all Bloomberg's money, huh? Except for what would he leave him, Walker? Maybe a couple million?
Leave Bernie?
Maybe. I mean, what I'm saying is, in all seriousness, tomorrow is going to be a clash between Sanders' socialism and Bloomberg's capitalism. And Bloomberg's going to have to defend capitalism against the socialist party.
Yeah.
Well, they're not all. They're split. It's 50-50 because you have your Clinton wing of the party, if you will, your Obama wing, that's not as hardcore socialist as Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
So, but the energy behind the Sanders, Warren, that movement, the
AOC.
Yeah, that. Her. The movement there is the energy behind them. It's just going to be a clash, and Bloomberg's going to have to put Sanders in his place, or Sanders is going to put him in his place.
That's right.
And it'll be the end of his candidacy.
You know, as a side note, if I were Joe Biden, I'd just stay out of that fight because he's not going to win. He's not really good debating.
Biden.
Biden. I'd stay out of the deal and let Warren and Sanders
rip into Bloomberg.
And you rip into him, and that is what they're going to do from the get-go. I'd stay out of that fight.
Yeah. Biden, Nevada is important for Biden. If he finishes third or fourth.
You think so?
Yeah.
Third or fourth.
I would think South Carolina is important to him, but I didn't know Nevada.
Nevada, that's his last stand.
A lot of people said about Nevada, he's good friends with Harry Reid, and Harry Reid pretty well owns Democrats in Nevada. And so if Biden finishes way back there, what happens is the momentum begins to fade.
What
even
momentum?
Going into South Carolina.
Oh, you mean there's no momentum for Biden, though.
Well, Biden was considered the party's candidate against Sanders.
Right.
And now that element appears to be dying. Biden's star is fading. So now what are they going to do? Bloomberg comes along. You're mentioning Bloomberg. But, you know, he's got to sound a little bit left, too. He can't sound too much like Donald Trump and capitalism because he'll lose. So they're in the Democratic Party. We said this yesterday, Tim, while you were away. The Democratic Party is in a crisis. There is no question about it. They are in a crisis. It's really interesting watching the Democrat representatives on the panel discussions.
Yeah.
And they're starting to admit we've got a problem.
I think here's what Michael Bloomberg needs to do tomorrow. Former mayor of, he's 12 years mayor of New York City, wasn't he? If I were him, I would start out with a, if I may have a few moments type thing, or my opening remarks. I would, first of all, I would say, I want to apologize to the panel and to everybody here and to Democrats watching everywhere for being white. That's number one. I want to apologize for being white. Number two, I would like to apologize for being male. That's number two. So that gets two things off the, huh? Mm-hmm. And then number three, you say, I want to apologize for being a billionaire. And right now, I just want to say, I'm giving all my money away, except for $10 million, to fight climate change. In fact, I want to up Jeff Bezos, who just did this too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would, so there you go. You're an environmentalist, and you've disavowed your whiteness, your richness, and your maleness.
Yep.
He might want to apologize for those videos, too, while he's at it.
Yes, the farmers.
Yeah, the farmers.
Oh, yeah.
Apologize to American farmers.
Oh, yeah.
That was not good.
And anybody over 85.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Well, we have a gentleman who's visiting with us today here in Tupelo. And he is doing a story for the German public radio. And Arndt, how you pronounce your last name?
Peltner.
P-E-L-T-N-E-R,
yeah.
P-E-L-T-N-E-R. Thank you for being.
Thank you for having me.
I know you're here to interview me, but I invited you on our radio.
No, it's very interesting to listen to you. Can I ask you a question?
Yes, go
ahead.
Why
did you come to California when you wanted to see the sun?
That is a good point. California does have that going for it. It's very sunny in California. It is typically sunny here in Mississippi and in the South, but we just haven't, I don't know, since November, we haven't had much, as I say, serotonin. So you live in Oakland?
In Oakland, yeah.
California. So tell us, you grew up in Germany, obviously.
Yes.
And when did you move to the U.S.?
I mean, the first time I was in the United States was in 87, and they really liked it. So I came back and with traveling, and then finally in 92, I did an internship in San Francisco at a facility for physically and sexually abused children for 1 year. And I met my girlfriend, and then we had a long-distance relationship between Germany and California, what it's quite challenging.
That's
with a nine-hour time change. And so in 90, I changed the profession from social work to journalism. Did a training in Germany, and then after my finishing of this training, I moved over in 96. So since 96.
What part of Germany do you hail from?
Nuremberg. It's like a northern part of Bavaria.
Okay. Hmm. And Germany is what, 80, 90 million people, something like that?
85, yeah, 85.
85 million people. Now, so what's the company that you work for?
I'm working for Deutschlandfunk Kultur. That's a nationwide public radio in Germany, so it reaches all over the country.
Would that be the equivalent to our national public radio?
Yeah, but NPR here is like organized in different stations locally, and then this is like a station. It's all over the country there. So it's like coming out of Berlin, and it's like they're non-commercial, so they don't have any commercials there. It's funded by the government.
Gotcha. So, what kind of stories do you? You do here in the U.S. So you're basically one of your roles is to do reporting here in the U.S. From the U.S. back to Germany on what's happening in this country.
Right, and plus I've traveled in the last 12 years. I'm traveling a lot to conflict and post-conflict areas. I was in Somalia, in Congo, Chad, Niger, so all these countries. And in California, I cover everything from a lot about the death penalty in San Quentin, about the German history in the United States. Last week, I visited a guy in Oakland who founded God's Gym, and it's like a fitness center with praying and doing this, combining this. It was very, very interesting there. So it's a lot of different stories. And so
that's a very interesting career, obviously.
It's
Now, did you say you traveled to Somalia?
Yeah.
And where else?
Congo, Niger, Chad, Sudan.
When did you do this?
Last fall, I was in Somalia, in Niger, in Sudan.
What were you doing over there?
I covered, like in Somalia and Niger, covered the importance of music in conflict areas, like how people see music and also how musicians see music in areas. And in Sudan, I traveled there with CARE, with the NGO CARE, to see like what the situation is after the revolution there on the ground and the conflicts there still and the problems for the people there and starvation in the eastern part of Sudan.
Well, listen, we are glad to have you.
Thank you.
In our studios today, and I know you're a neutral party. You're not fan nor foe. You're here to report on what we do, but you are doing some stories on the culture divide,
right.
In the U.S. and as it politically and other. Otherwise, right?
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, I really want to thank you, actually, for inviting me over here because I contacted a lot of other organizations. They all declined to talk to me. And you were the only one who invited me over here because I think it's very important in these days and times to talk to each other.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
Of course, I'm coming from a different part of the country where Donald Trump had 3% and
I was gonna ask, the votes. You were telling me that in our meeting. You know, we're speaking right now to mostly supporters of President Trump, obviously, who listen to this network.
Uh-huh.
But you said you live in Oakland, California, and you told me that in 2016, in your neighborhood or your area, Trump got how many votes?
3%.
3%.
And in Berkeley?
Who beat him?
Everybody else.
The Green Party.
No, in Berkeley, next door, is like Jill Stein from the Green Party had 4%. So she beat like Donald Trump there.
Berkeley. Oh my god.
So you can see like
different guys, it's the same country but different world.
So for me it's very interesting to come here to a different part of the United States and see like
On behalf of all deplorables, let me just say we welcome you. Okay?
Yes. Thank you in the name of all the progressives.
Yes. He put air quotes up there. But all right. Thank you. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That's excellent.
All right. You're listening to American Family Radio. I tell you what, Brent, can we take our break a little early here? And when we come back, see, Sandy Rios will be joining us in a few moments. And we got much more news to talk about that's coming up on today's issues on American Family Radio. And let me just say to Michael Bloomberg that if he wants to give American Family Radio $10 million, I'll do an interview with him just like I did right there with Art. Okay? And we'll let him say what he wants to do, what he wants to say to the country. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with more of today's issues on American Family Radio.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III.
I remind you, when Jesus in resurrected form was walking on the road to Emmaus, and the Bible says that Jesus opened all things to them from the Scripture, he's talking about the First Testament, the Old Testament. If you try to unhitch from the Old Testament, you're unhitching from the Bible of Jesus.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, I was looking over our itinerary for our June and September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. We go to the Capitol, the Library of Congress, the Supreme Court, the Lincoln Memorial, the Korean and Vietnam Memorials, the Iwo Jima Memorial, Arlington National Cemetery, the White House, the Jefferson Memorial, and the National Archives, and the World War II Memorial, and including Mount Vernon. We go to Mount Vernon as well, so you can't do any more than what we do on our tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. We also go to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour, but the tours are back-to-back. So if you want to go with us in June, we're almost full, or September, go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. All the information is there, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with News and Commentary next. My name is Dr. Andrew Fabich, and I teach microbiology here at Drew McConnell University. And so instead of trying to teach biology from this perspective that gives you this goo-to-you version of evolution, you get this perspective of this is who God is, this is who God has revealed himself to be, and he's revealed himself in nature, which is terribly exciting to study.
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. Republicans and Democrats are fired up after Mayor Michael Bloomberg insulted American farmers and blue-collar workers. Back in 2016, Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York City, was on a panel at the University of Oxford. He was asked a question about whether it's possible to unite people in Middle America with the coastal elites. Bloomberg says the problem is the inability of blue-collar workers to adapt to the information age. As for farmers, he said, in essence, you don't need a lot of gray matter in your brain to plant corn. Clearly, Mr. Bloomberg has mastered the art of arrogance. This is a man who wants to be president of the United States, and I doubt he knows the difference between a soybean and a butter bean. In the words of former President Dwight Eisenhower, a son of Kansas, farming looks mighty easy when your plow is a pencil and you're 1,000 miles from the cornfield. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, if you'd like to watch the show on Facebook or YouTube, we welcome you to join us. We live video stream at, just type in Today's Issues. Today's Issues on YouTube or Facebook, and you can follow us there. We also post the stories that we talk about. Fred gives them to Brent, and Brent posts them on our Facebook page. So if you want the original source of the topics that we're discussing here, check it out on Facebook. Walker, what do you got coming up? When is it? Thursday?
Yeah, this Thursday night, just in a couple of days, on the 20th, I'll be in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I'll be there along with Abe Hamilton III, my brother Wesley, and Rob Chambers from AFA Action. The four of us will be in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania at a town hall event, and it's open to the public. You just need to register. It'll be Thursday night, beginning, I believe, at 6:30 on Thursday night. And I'm going to give out the website where you can go and register.
It's free?
It's free. You just need to register. afa.net/events. afa.net/events. And if you go there, you'll see the event there listed. All you have to do is click register, and all the information is there.
So check that out. You, Abe, Wesley, Rob.
That's right.
Dan Celia and yours truly will be in Lafayette, Louisiana on Thursday as well. So if you want to register for that, it's a free event, but you need to register so we'll know you're coming. Just go to afafoundation.net. I'm talking about two nights from now. afafoundation.net, afafoundation.net. You can go there and register for our event in Lafayette, Louisiana this Thursday night. So check that out. Dan Celia will be the headliner. I'll be opening for Dan Celia. All right. Fred, Sandy's with us. Sandy, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Sandy Rios, good morning. Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association, and also a host of Sandy Rios in the morning. Fred, you wanted to ask Sandy the first question?
I just want to say Sandy gets up real early.
Yeah,
because I checked my email this morning at 4:30, and Sandy was emailing me something about a story I did. So
thank you, Fred, for that affirmation. I do get up early.
We're early risers, you know.
Yes, we are.
I have to ask Sandy, what time do you typically try to go to bed?
Well, then you can laugh at this too. I try to go to bed at 8 o'clock.
Okay,
Eastern Standard Time. Eastern.
So you're one of those that goes to bed before the sun goes down?
Pretty much. Yes. Just ask my husband. Good night, dear. See ya.
Oh, all right, Fred.
Yeah, we have a new poll out this morning, NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll. And Mr. Sanders, Bernie Sanders, doing really well, top of the stack, 31%. But then Michael Bloomberg comes in number two at 19%. And apparently that's good enough to get him into the debate tomorrow night in Las Vegas.
No, that's not good enough. A big fat check is good enough. But I guess, but the criteria they're giving there is
gets him in.
The percentage.
So what do you think of this? I mean, is all of a sudden Bloomberg, this is the poll results now. The poll results putting him number two to Sanders. Biden is number three at 15%. So are we starting to see that maybe Bloomberg's ads are having some kind of impact on the American public? Or what's your assessment of that, Sandy?
Well, I actually think my hunch is that these are Biden voters who just sense that Joe Biden is imploding, and they perceive that Michael Bloomberg is more moderate, even though he isn't. Mm. And so he's like the moderate. They're always calling their candidates moderate, you know, the ones that promote abortion for all night months and,
yes,
you know, ban straws and soft drinks and that's, and worse. Michael Bloomberg's policies are horrible. They really are. He is no centrist. But I really do think, to answer your question, that it's probably the implosion of Joe Biden's campaign. And I don't think, I did see a pretty powerful Bloomberg commercial this morning early while you and I were the only ones awake, Fred. And it was hitting Bernie Sanders, and it was talking about his, the Bernie, they call them, they have a name for them, the Bernie team. It's not quite right, but it's like the thugs.
Bernie Bros.
Bernie Bros. Thank you, Walker. Anyway, and it was like a whole series of vicious tweets by Bernie supporters. You know, I can't say them because they're so foul, and it shows a whole series of those and pretty much says, you know, is this what you want to lead the country? These are the people that back Bernie Sanders. So I thought that was a great commercial. I'd like to use it, but not in support of Bloomberg. So he's running some powerful commercials. He spent about $400 million, as I understand it, already. And he hasn't even been in one debate yet. But I honestly don't think he can. I do not think anyone, including Bloomberg, can buy the presidential election. I really don't. You can buy local races. You can buy governorship. You can buy when people don't really know. Name recognition is a challenge. But I think on the national stage, there are too many reasons why you cannot buy enough commercials to really buy that office. I'd be surprised if he could.
Sandy, I want to ask a question about Joe Biden. You used the word implosion. He has gone from the presumptive front runner all the way down. I mean, he's way back in the pack now. Is he done for, or is there an actual credible way Joe Biden could still win the nomination?
No. I really don't think so. I mean, Ray, nobody knows.
Yeah.
I don't claim to know, but I don't think so. I don't think there's any way. You know, Joe Biden has never been a good candidate. That's probably why Barack Obama, one of the many reasons he would not endorse him. This is not new. Joe Biden has tried to run for president, what, three times prior to this? He has not just been making mistakes lately. This is his life. Remember Bob Gates, the former national security advisor for Obama, when he wrote his book, said that Biden was wrong on every single foreign policy issue. You don't even know the half of it. One of the reasons I think he was able to get to where he was is that he was from a small state. He was elected to Senate when he was like 28, something like that. And he's just gained power because he knows how to do that. He's wielded power, but he is there's no substance to him.
So if Biden is done and Buttigieg is sort of sinking away, who does that leave as the front runner? I guess I'm asking we're just supposing here, but we get 2 or 3 weeks down the road past Super Tuesday, who's going to be head of the Democratic pack? Is it going to be Bernie?
Well, my answer will probably really surprise you, Ray. And again, how would I know? There are too many factors, but my take on it is that I actually think that the strongest candidate in the field is Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
Wow.
I think he is the dark horse, dangerous candidate. Pete is a red diaper baby. His dad was a communist, and I'm going to actually do a whole show on this coming up. And he's actually been groomed for this for a long time. And you notice how smiley and, yeah, aw shucks, you know, he's just a boy from Indiana, and he's always the victim, you know. And meanwhile, he's saying horrible things like abortion for all 9 months for any reason. He was actually at a rally yesterday for Planned Parenthood and talked about how how warm and fuzzy it made you feel to hear the stories of abortions, how wonderful it was. He is a radical leftist couched in a smile. And yeah. so he's also Soros's pick, I think. So I think Pete Buttigieg may likely prevail and be the candidate. That's what I think.
Wow. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Well, Sandy, what I talked about earlier, tomorrow night, is this debate tomorrow night, you said, yes. in Nevada. And if Bloomberg, is the plan for him to be on stage, Fred?
Yes.
Okay, he's going to be on stage. Sandy, it's going to be, I know we have our fights in the conservative movement sometimes. Obviously, when you have debates, we remember the debates that the Republicans had. They go after each other because they want to separate themselves from the others so that they can win. I mean, that's how this works. But when you're going to separate on something as fundamental as how to handle the economy, or what kind of views you have on American economic system, that's going to be an interesting conflict, because you're going to have, you should have a clash between Bloomberg and Sanders on socialism versus capitalism, shouldn't you, Sandy?
Yes, I would think so. But
Bloomberg's got to apologize for being a capitalist. Really? In front of that crowd?
Well, that's funny, because I don't... Okay, let me find my words here. I'm not sure that Bloomberg is so... Look, I don't know. He's got a net worth of billions. He certainly has used the capitalist system. But when you look at his policies, they seem to be like top down to me, like control other people. So I'm not so sure he is for the kind of capitalism you're talking about, where it's, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. We're getting to know him. But
well, we'll find out tomorrow
night.
He's
Sanders, for free market for him. But yep. I'm not sure about for thee.
We'll find out tomorrow night a lot, because I think Bernie Sanders, especially, and Elizabeth Warren, they're going to push him. And attack him for capitalism. And he's going to have to say, wait a minute, I'm not really a capitalist. I'm just rich. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. As he writes out his checks. Yeah.
But that is going to be interesting to see. But they're also going to go after him again. He must have been a very popular mayor of New York, to his credit, though. He was elected, three terms as a Republican in New York?
I mean, he's not very Republican in terms of his policies.
No, he's not, but I mean...
And he spent like $200 million just to get elected the first time in New York. I know that doesn't get you reelected, but name recognition in New York, I imagine, probably helps a lot, because it's like a third world city. Not necessarily a lot of homies there, you know, watching the news and paying attention.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about, Sandy, before we let you go here. What's your take on the attacks on William Barr, Attorney General?
Well, I'm thinking that's very directly can be attributed to his what he's doing behind the scenes. You know, he's appointed a special counsel to review Michael Flynn's case now. Mm-hmm. He intervened apart from President Trump's direction, although President Trump had every right to talk to him about that. They've made it seem as though that's wrong. It isn't. He should be able to talk to his attorney general and weigh in anytime he wants. But his intervention on the draconian sentencing for Roger Stone, they also, I understand, he's got several other attorneys, special attorneys in various parts of the country, appointed to look into some of this stuff that are not connected to D.C.,
okay.
And the deep state's going apoplectic, and they want him out. They want to get rid of him. In fact, the letter that those former 1,100 Justice Department employees penned basically called for an all-out rebellion among people who work at the Justice Department to refuse to do these things, to report anything you see. It was to undermine Bill Barr. Yeah. So it's dangerous. This is another dangerous phase of this same long journey we're on.
Yeah. I don't want to get too deep into this Roger Stone story, this part of it, because I quite frankly don't know everything. He was convicted of
He was convicted of two or three process crimes, like witness tampering, lying to Congress.
That's pretty serious stuff, though, to me.
No doubt.
Huh?
Yeah.
So, but Sandy, what happened there? He was. He got the sentence he got was far and above what somebody who wasn't connected to President Trump would have gotten? Is
Absolutely.
That the argument?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And could I just say a couple of things? Look, I don't think Roger Stone is as pure as a driven snow. He's not going to be a Sunday school teacher. He's a D.C. figure, and I'd say he is a shadowy figure. So I don't want to misstate. But I would say, from what I know about the case, his tampering with a witness was a talk show host that was connecting him to Julian Assange of WikiLeaks. And allegedly, Stone said something about taking his dog from him. And the talk show host who allegedly was threatened said, in the record, I read his words, I never felt threatened by Roger Stone, nor did I think my dog was being threatened. So yeah. If he didn't feel threatened, but the feds charged him with witness tampering.
Right. Yeah.
And also the foreman of the jury, perhaps you've heard, was a deeply connected Democratic operative who regularly tweeted against President Trump on the Russian collusion. And she claimed in her interview that she, I don't pay much attention. She completely falsified. And it was not hard to find the information. Obviously, Roger Stone's attorneys did a horrible job of vetting vetting jurors. There were other problems on the jury. So Stone is asking for a retrial, and he should get it, I think.
Yeah.
This
Roger Stone case, you know, yeah, maybe he gets a couple years, two or three, maybe. But the sentencing recommendation for charges such as this are never 9 years. It's never 9 years. As Trey Gowdy noted, there's rapists and child pornographers who get, like, 2 years. Anthony Weiner was convicted of
a minor.
Yeah, of sending
sexting a minor,
explicit
basically.
Messages to a minor, and he got 21 months, and he didn't even serve the full time in jail.
Yeah.
So,
just interject that Andrew McCabe lied to the FBI several times, and he just got there's no investigation at all.
Yeah,
he's
I know.
Just free.
I know.
Yeah, there wasn't even a grand jury there.
But Roger Stone's going to get 9 years. That's what they asked for.
Yeah,
7 to 9
years.
And so
President Trump gets upset about that for obvious reasons. And then you know, the media just acts indignant, like, how can he interfere with a case? Well, you know, why can't a president speak out? He can't fire the federal judge, you know, in charge of the case. Now, whether that's tactful or not, you know, is debatable, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. But when the deep state's coming after Barr, you know, what people need to understand, and I think most of our listeners do, is you have the yes, when you have a new administration like President Trump comes in and he hires his people, and they have many of them have to be, by the way, confirmed to the Senate and vetted that way, especially his cabinet. Yeah, they're new, but all the people under them are holdovers from 8 years of Obama, basically, are their career federal government employees. And they're almost all Democrats. So that's the system that's the environment in which President Trump has to operate. So you wonder, why has there been so many leaks? Well, you've got most of Washington, D.C. as opposed to the Trump administration, even though the, quote, boss sits in the White House and does the hiring. But I don't think you'll see this settle down until a second administration, should President Trump be reelected, and I do think it will settle down some, but because then you will have some years at least of putting some new people into those offices in the federal government. Hey, Sandy, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Tim. Nice to talk to you guys.
Okay, take care.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Ray, what do you think about all this?
Look, I wish he'd go ahead and pardon Roger Stone. And Mike Flynn, while he's at it, too. Mm-hmm. And it's a charade. It's a political charade. The misuse of the judicial process for political ends. That's not like a new thing. It's been happening for a long time. I think you will pardon them. Tim, you said the other day, maybe he won't pardon them until after the election. I understand that it's a political move, but I would be pretty happy if today he just issued pardons for both men and put an end to all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boy, the level of the corrupt justice system under Barack Obama, just pull the camera back a bit.
Yeah.
There's a brand new book out on the tarmac meeting between then Attorney General Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton. In the midst of Hillary Clinton being investigated by the Justice Department.
Yeah.
There's a book out that says that meeting was planned.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
The writer of it says that meeting was planned, and he has proof of it. And yeah. he's had death threats since writing that book. Mm. So you've got that going on. And then you've got the whole Mueller thing going on, that you had a candidate, then Donald Trump, being investigated by the Justice Department. And Barack Obama, you know, knew about this. And now all of this stuff.
Yeah, to me, the most shocking fact about this Bill Barr situation is that you had Monday of last week, one of the lead prosecutors on the Roger Stone case, there was four of them, one of the lead prosecutors came into Bill Barr's office, and they were talking about the sentencing recommendation, and Bill Barr said that you need to heed the advice of the judge, let the judge decide the sentencing, which they do, and then you need to outline why what other people with similar charges get, which is 2 or 3 years, maybe 3 years maximum. And the prosecutor completely ignored his boss's mm-hmm. order mm-hmm. and went that night mm-hmm. and recommended 9 years
yeah.
in front of the judge. And then the next day, the four prosecutors resigned.
Yeah.
So that there you have a Mueller. Some of these guys are Mueller guys.
Yes.
Heading the Roger Stone case. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And look, directly being insubordinate.
You know what, guys, and you know, try to look at all the facts of this whole thing, this whole situation with the left versus the Trump administration since it started, or candidate-elect, mm-hmm. President-elect Trump, I should say, and try to be objective about it, even though my politics obviously are in line with President Trump's politics for the most part, right? So you have to try to, that gives you a bias, but if you recognize it, you try to step back and be objective about this whole thing. Trying to be objective about this whole thing, this all started with the FBI, correct me if you disagree with me, the FBI spying on illegally, basically, and without probable cause, spying on President Trump's team.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Then this, I would call it a setup to get Michael Flynn. I don't know about I haven't followed the Roger Stone case, but would you call it the same?
Yeah, it's entrapment. Some of the stuff that they used to charge Roger Stone. But what I said on my show this weekend, without the Russia hoax, which is what you're talking about, there would be no Roger Stone process crimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Then you have a Mueller is appointed a special prosecutor for 2 years. With basically an unlimited amount of money to go after the president and all the people he knew while he's in office, and the whole team of lawyers that Mueller was working for him were Clinton supporters. Then they get these FISA court applications sent over to spy on President Trump's campaign, and the FBI falsified them. Right, Walker?
Yes.
At the top level.
Yes.
And that's still under investigation.
Yes, by John Durham.
By John Durham.
Yeah.
So you see that happening, and then you see Hillary Clinton doing State Department business, even classified information, on a server she put in her bathroom at her house. And then Justice Department, quote, investigates her, they don't even put her under oath. They don't even put her under oath. And yeah. Peter Strzok, the fanboy of Hillary Clinton, is the one investigating.
He's in charge.
He's the one that decides not to put her under oath and interview her for 2 hours.
Yeah.
I don't want to digress too much here, but we had a Navy guy who took a picture inside a submarine. He got jail time.
Yes.
For the very same things that Hillary Clinton should have been investigated for. What I'm saying is So the Secretary of State is using a bathroom, a server in her bathroom, and she doesn't even get put under oath while she's using, and she's the one that gets to delete the emails before it's turned over to the Justice Department.
She had her staff physically with a hammer. We're not making this stuff up.
No, not making this stuff up. I'm just saying
they beat up the server with a hammer.
So I'm saying you put all this stuff together, one thing after another, after another, after another, when it becomes clear that there is a deep state and they're in favor of the liberals in Washington, D.C., and they hate President Trump. You know what, Ray? That whole thing is still going on even today. And I've gotten to where I don't even pay hardly any attention to the accusations against people with President Trump, because I look at the whole story and I think, you can tell me Roger Stone lied to the whoever he did, and then I go, and maybe I shouldn't be this way. I get kind of cynical. I go, they don't even investigate the Secretary of State for intentionally deceiving the oversight of the Congress of her her office.
Email
anyway,
usage.
Go ahead, Ray.
Well, look,
I'm out of breath.
the fix has been in from the beginning on this. The Democrats and their supporters in the quote deep state, they're going to cover
and
for
the
each
media.
Other.
And the media,
they are going to cover for each other. Then somebody like Roger Stone did whatever he did, and they're going to try to give him 7, 8, or 9 years. When is Roger Stone going to be? When's his sentencing? It's coming up pretty soon, right?
Yeah, it'll be in the next few months.
Okay.
Yeah, the sentencing, the recommendation was from the prosecutor's team.
The President of the United States has a right to pardon.
Yes, full right.
So if the President of the United States has a right to pardon, why does the media freak out about him tweeting about it?
Yeah, that's what I've said. The president can't obstruct justice because he has the power to pardon. That's the ultimate obstruction of justice. And then not to mention, the president is over the Justice Department. So now I'm not talking about whether it looks good politically to do certain things. I'm talking about legally.
Sure.
Legally, the president can call the attorney general and say, hey, I think you should prosecute this guy. Or I think you should go easy on this guy. Now, whether that looks good, that's a whole separate conversation. But whether he has a legal authority to, he completely does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a huge double standard here between when the Democrats are in power and Republicans are in power. And you just mentioned the word media. It's all about them. If everything was in reverse here, the media would be the attack dogs against the Secretary of State if she was a Republican.
Oh, my word.
It would be... totally in reverse.
The impeachment
hoax. If the media was doing its job, they would pound away at Nancy Pelosi every day that she got up there and said it's an impeachable offense.
Yeah,
Adam Schiff. You know,
I'll give you another example. If Hunter Biden knocking down what $70,000 a month from this energy company in the Ukraine, is that right? Something to that effect. What was reported?
Yes.
Yes.
By the way, that's a great job if you can get it. So I don't blame the guy. But, you know, what are you going to do? No, I don't want any more than 50. No. But imagine for a moment the media, if Donald Trump Jr. were sitting on the board of a Ukrainian or any Russian energy company pulling in $70,000 a month. You think the media would just say, nothing to see here?
Yeah.
Huh? No. I mean, they freak out when the government does something at a Trump hotel.
Yeah,
that's right.
Pays the going rates.
Yeah.
All right, Fred, thank you.
All right, good to be here.
Walker, Ray, and I shall return after this time out with more of today's issue. Steve Jordahl will join us. We hope that you will, too, here on American Family Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.